Come on. Come on.
You are listening to The Mauer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business.
I think that, hold on, that might have been part of my problem. Let's see if it ends. Come on, answer the dang call. Brian, we're live, so just so you know, so don't say anything you don't want to end your career on tonight. hey, thank you for doing this, Brian.
Hey, no problem. How are you?
Good. Brian Parfum? Did I say that right?
Parfum.
I'm sorry. I've been so wrapped up in this story that I haven't even thought about that. So,
no problem. It's the name you don't want to grow up with as a kid. I got to use a lot.
Yeah, so first and foremost, again, thank you for making a few minutes for me here tonight, because I know it's been a busy afternoon, evening, probably a couple days for you.
Happy to help spread the word.
So for my listeners, why don't you just go ahead and dive in deep? Let's just go ahead and get out what you're... This whole situation was ugly to start with, but now it seems like it's got even worse, and I was totally unaware of this until a little bit ago, and then we're going to make sure we get this out there tonight.
Yeah, for your American listeners, I'm a reporter for the Toronto Sun, it's a daily newspaper in Toronto, Canada. The way our government works is a little different than the U.S., that rather than just having the mandated election every 4 years, our prime minister has the ability to call an election whenever he likes. Our current prime minister, Justin Trudeau, who is the son of Pierre Trudeau, who was prime minister before I was born, he called a snap election last Sunday. Right now, he doesn't have enough seats in our parliament to maintain a majority government. So what he's done is, in the middle of the pandemic, against a lot of really good advice, he decided to call an election because the poll numbers were good, and he was hoping to maintain get enough votes to secure a majority government, which would allow him complete control in the parliament. I'm not going to go into the intricacies of Canadian parliament, but on the same day that he called the election, the day that Kabul fell. And that has pretty much dominated his campaign ever since. Now, I've been covering a lot of stories out of Kabul. I've got some contacts there through various means. And the big issue right now is that there's a lot of Canadian citizens in Kabul right now who have no way to get out. And just like in the United States, there's a lot of local Afghans that helped out our military. There's interpreters, fixers, embassy staff, security guards. And a lot of them are stranded there. A lot of them are on Taliban hit lists, so they're trying to, they're trying not only to escape, but also to, stay in hiding and prevent themselves from being killed. If, the Taliban are going door to door looking for anybody who they suspect assisted the Allies during the Afghan War. So the stories I've been covering have been highlighting a lot of their struggles trying to get out and dealing with. Really, what my opinion is a complete inept effort by the Canadian government to do that. I see a lot of American friends talking about the failures of the American government in getting people out. Well, whatever failures that the U.S. is going through is multiplied by 1,000 here. For example, German troops, German Air Force tweeted photos of the helicopters they're bringing into Kabul. They're choppering up their people. British military, U.S. military are running armed patrols into Kabul to get their people out. Our government is telling people where to go and hoping for the best. Unfortunately, it's had a lot of negative problems. There was a first attempt by Global Affairs Canada, which is the same as your, whatever department in the U.S. government deals with things like passports and external affairs and stuff. They had told their evacuees to go to the north gate of the Kabul airport, to wear red, and to tell the guards there that that they are Canadians and they needed to get out. Fortunately, the American and the Afghan soldiers patrolling that gate have been turning away our evacuees and the contact with a few Canadian citizens over there who have tried to get out, and they've had absolutely no luck. So the story I wrote today talks about Global Affairs Canada's latest attempt, which culminated in an email that was sent out this evening by Afghanistan time, ordering people to get out of their safe homes, to go to the a certain hotel by the airport, and to present themselves to a Canadian consular official who was supposed to be there waiting for people. So one of the couples that I spoke to, which they're an elderly couple from Toronto, they're Canadian citizens, they have Canadian passports. The gentleman is he's a cancer patient. He's he doesn't have that much longer to live. So they went back to Afghanistan to, I guess, tie up affairs and sell some property and stuff. After being turned away twice before, you know, they're wearing red and everything else, they said, okay, well, let's do it. So they got into a taxi. They spent 2 hours in the taxi, you know, going through Taliban checkpoints to get to this hotel. And when they got there, there was no consular official. There was just an open sewage lagoon with American soldiers on the other side, and the American soldiers just told them to go away. They called the they called a special hotline set up for Afghan evacuees set up by the Canadian government. And the rep on the other end of the line said, no, just please be persistent. Just say that you're looking for the consular official. Just don't leave until, you know, don't leave until they tell you. So that's what they did. They went back up there, and the soldier, started yelling at them, reached for his rifle, and, told them to get the F off the, out of the area. So they spent the next 12 hours sort of huddled in the corner. There's a lot of crowds coming in, a lot of Taliban coming in. And, by the time the sun rose, there was absolutely nobody around. No Canadian officials to appeal to, so they went back to their condo, and which is where they're going to remain until something better comes, because they're elderly. You know, the gentleman, if he ends up falling or getting shoved, he breaks an arm or a leg, he's pretty much done for. So that's the situation on the ground facing facing Canadians in Afghanistan,
which is just absolutely insane. And then you just sent me a link with some video in it here, which is absolutely more insane. I don't even know. There's not a word for what you sent me. Insane. We'll have to.
There's that first story when another one of my contacts sent me two videos. And if you look at my story on TorontoSun.com, it's at the top of the site right now. You'll see it. What the videos? The video depicts a bunch of local Afghan evacuees. These are Afghan locals who served alongside our troops. They serve as interpreters, fixers and embassy staff, people who, through putting their lives at risk, our country had promised them that they would evacuate them and give them a brand new life in Canada. They've got all the proper paperwork. They got the visas. They got all the clearance from our government to go and say, hey, go to the airport and, to show them and we'll get in. So the video that I was sent shows these evacuees standing in an open sewage canal. Kabul doesn't have covered sewer mains like most of the developed world. All of their which gets fed into these canals, which makes the way to the treatment plants the way a lot of the sewage is handled in that part of the world. So they're standing in this disgusting sewage pit full of feces and just unimaginable filth, just desperately pleading with a group of Canadian soldiers just above the berm there, showing their paperwork, showing look, we have visas, we were told to come here. And the Canadian soldiers were just ignoring. They were walking by, weren't even looking at them, just ignoring them. And it was heartbreaking. And what I've heard from people on the ground, it's made me ashamed to be Canadian. I've always been proud of my country. I've always been proud of, how Canadians have been. But, this is really, it's making me, making me ashamed to be Canadian, because, I'm looking there. I am, and they're looking at, other countries like the U.S. and Belgium and Germany and the U.K. going to these extraordinary measures, bringing in helicopters and C-17s to chopper people out, and even just running buses. He sent me some photos of buses with German license plates that obviously had been brought in by a cargo plane just to take people out. And Canada can't do anything like that. Canada doesn't have a bus that they can send. Canada doesn't have a helicopter they can send like we have. We have C-17s that can hold, a couple of smaller helicopters or a large Chinook. that can easily go over there. But you know, and it's, and we haven't, our leadership hasn't, and it just seems our leadership, our prime minister is a lot more intent on, you know, on winning a snap election that he called last week than helping our people up there, which is really incredibly disappointing. And some of the stuff I'm hearing from these guys, like the guy I'm talking to, like I won't go into too much detail about who he is or what he did for us, because, you know, he promised me not to, you know, to reveal his identity, because, you know, the Taliban are actively hunting these people. He told me, he said, we lost all our hope and they ignored us. He said, we just thought they're there showing themselves to the world and they were helping us here, but the reality is that nobody cares about Afghans. And he's right. You know, it just seems that a lot of the Western world really, they do what they did in Afghanistan. I'm not going to get into, the reasons. I lean right politically, so I'm all in favor of, the reasoning why they went there. I witnessed 9/11 firsthand. I used to work for a news station in Toronto, and I witnessed the whole thing, and no one was more into, getting bin Laden and getting rid of the Taliban more than I. But, once we pack up and leave, our mission in Afghanistan ended, a good time before the U.S.'s did. But it just seems like we use these people and just forgot about them. And it's heartbreaking.
And it's heartbreaking. It's troubling. Once this news breaks, of course it's already broke, but it's going to be in the paper tomorrow and all this other stuff, that can't look good when you're trying to wage a campaign either, let alone the humanitarian side of this all. How does this skew all that campaigning that we're trying to do? On top, we're talking multi-levels here of problems, but I can't imagine that being helpful. Or is that just my American politics coming out?
and that's the thing. A lot of Canadians grow up consumed by American media. I grew up watching American Sesame Street. They had Canadian version of Sesame Street, but it just wasn't as good. I learned how to count to 10 in Spanish before I did in French just from watching American TV. So we're very aware up here of the American system, and it's really heartbreaking that. For all of the criticism that President Biden is getting for how he's reacting, how he's dealing with this, for all the criticism that former President Trump put with the Taliban to leave when they did, really, this isn't a partisan issue. This is an issue of common human decency. It's an issue of fulfilling a promise. Compared to us, the extraordinary lengths that the Americans are going to get their people out. Like anybody who looks at a flight tracker who tracks military aircraft, will see that there's dozens of American and other allied planes going in and out. Like the Air Mobility Command is running C-17s in and out of Kabul constantly. The British, the Royal Air Force are running people constantly, and occasionally we send a plane. Like, we send in one or two C-17s a day to get people out. And we're really limited in the people that we can transport out because, our C-17s don't have air-to-air refueling capability. We don't have any way to refuel our planes on the ground in Kabul. They land in Kabul, they idle with the engines running. They load up as many people as they can according to weight, and they take off. And, they're staged out of Kuwait City, so they're leaving just enough fuel to fly to Kabul, load up the people, and come back. And, we see these amazing stories about, these American C-17s loaded up with like 800 people, but Canadian C-17s are only coming up with 100 because that's all that they can fit on there. Any more than that, they'll probably fall out of the sky with fuel exhaustion. So it's really shameful to see our response. I really want to stress that a lot of this really falls on leadership. I've heard from a lot of Canadian soldiers, both here and overseas, who are ashamed of how we're doing things. I broke a story last week that, 2 days before Prime Minister Trudeau called the election, there was a rapid response team in Kabul that was immediately sent from Canada, ready to rescue people. And they'd been sitting on the ground for 3 days, but because of the election call, it took up all the bandwidth in Ottawa. The rescue mission was delayed by days, and it's really is depressing to see how our government is really handling this, and it's you know, it's breaking my heart because these people who are, they're sending me messages, they're sending me photos of themselves, sending me photos, and it's heartbreaking knowing that a lot of these people I'm talking to are probably going to be murdered in the next few days.
That's the outrage of this. So do we have any idea how many people were trying to get out?
I have absolutely no clue because they won't tell me. They say that every time I ask a question, they say it's confidential because of security reasons. I see the U.S. releases numbers. I see the U.K. Ministry of Defense releases numbers. But we can't get numbers out of our government. You know, we try to ask for more information about their operations. You know, the German Air Force is tweeting active photos of what they're doing, loading up helicopters in their planes and getting people out. We ask for the same thing in Canada, and they hide behind the national security thing. So it's a lot of it is being concealed. A lot of it is being withheld due to under the guise of national security, because really, I don't think that they have the numbers, and B, they don't want to be embarrassed.
Well, I mean, they're going to be embarrassed now because of what's coming out. I mean, that's just...
and that's what I feel bad about, because it just seems like the only way to really get change is to try to shame the government into taking action. You know, it has worked before, but unfortunately, we have our prime minister right now has had a lot of scandals that he has extremely successfully shrugged off by just denying that they exist. You know, during our last election a couple of years ago, like we're only 2 years from the last federal election. Our Prime Minister Trudeau was, people found videos and photos of him in blackface. He, during his days as a teacher, he showed up to a school function with his face all blacked out, pretending to be, it was an Arabian Nights theme. So he showed up and his face all darkened out. That was followed soon by a video of him performing the song Deo by Harry Belafonte in complete blackface. There was another video of him in blackface with what looked like a large banana shoved down the front of his pants, jumping around like a monkey. And he survived it because, you know, I really don't know why. You know, I don't know if media gave him a pass or just, it's really baffling as to how somebody can survive that, especially during an election campaign. There was another instance during that same campaign where several years prior, before he got into politics, there were allegations that he had groped a reporter, grabbed certain parts of her body, and he dismissed it by saying that pretty much calling her a liar, saying, "Well, I don't remember like that." And it really is confusing about how he's able to, you know, shrug this thing off. But the thing is that I get the sense that, myself and a lot of other journalists are completely pounding him on the Afghanistan issue. And he's doing the same thing as he did before with all the other previous scandals. He's just shrugged it off and just ignored it. And I think this time a lot of people are going to hold him to account, because a lot of people aren't happy that, you know, that he's calling an election, you know, right in the cusp of the COVID-19 fourth wave here in Canada. Our case counts are going up, you know, starting to go up exponentially again. And this is several months after, you know, during a press conference, he claimed that, you know, nobody wants an election during a pandemic. He would never call an election during a pandemic. We are two months later, and we're having an election in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, it's just mind-blowing. I mean, the cluster of events, as I like to peel the onion back, so to speak, and see all the layers, and just what's going
there's
on.
There's a lot of layers.
There's a lot of layers going on here, my friend. It's just, I'm not even sure it's an onion anymore. Yeah. It's just kind of smooshed together into one layer, though. That's the scary part.
You know, Canadian politics is an extremely interesting animal, you know, and even, like, for people like me who are interested in that kind of thing, but even for, like, casual observers, It can get quite bizarre sometimes. We're not like the States, the two-party system. We have several parties. We've got three major parties right now. The Liberals, which is Justin Trudeau's the leader of the Conservative Party, which just got a new leader, you know, not even a year ago. We got the new Democratic Party, which is leans pretty far left, particularly by American standards, but definitely by Canadian standards. And there's a few other fringe parties that are trying to to get their peace. But yeah, Canadian politics is a very, very interesting, intricate animal that I think that doesn't nearly get as much interest as it should, especially compared to the intricacies of the American system as well.
Well, I'm interested now, so you're probably going to be seeing me hanging around and retweeting, reading some of your stuff, because I'm mind blown now by all this and just all of it. Like, I guess, well, you know, you kind of get in your own little bubble, and I'm sure you understand that, and it's just all consuming mm-hmm. all the time. So if we were to talk a week ago, what would we have talked about? Because it seems like this is all this kind of...
a week ago would be pretty much almost the same thing. This failures in Afghanistan. A week ago was there was a gentleman that I had met online who was a battalion chief at our embassy security forces in Afghanistan, local, who you know, went through the entire process to apply to come to Canada, but he was waiting for one final email that would allow him to go on, and that email never came. And this is at the same time that Justin Trudeau is going on national TV saying that it's not bureaucracy, but it's the Taliban that's keeping people out. And meanwhile, I've got my guy and several other guys that are just caught up in bureaucracy. Like, one final email. Like, the people at the gates of the airport won't look at him without this email. And, you know, the other day he made a one final attempt to go through, and Canadians turned him away. So he's him and his wife and his five kids. And they all sat down on the ground, and they're like, you know, what are we going to do? Because this guy is, you know, this guy's been targeted before. He was the subject of a drive-by shooting a couple of years ago because he's quite well known with the Taliban and the anti-government forces in Afghanistan. So once the Taliban came in, he was definitely going to be target number one. So he's been spending the past few weeks just constantly on the run. So he's sitting outside of the airport in Kabul. RAF officer, British Air Force officer, walked by. Took pity. They saw that their little boy, who's just over a year old, was sick. They'd been outside the airport for 24 hours. He'd caught a cold. He had no food. And this little baby was just having a really, really hard time. So the RAF officer took pity, brought the whole family inside. And that was the last I've heard of him. This was last Thursday. And he told me that the British had taken him in. He wasn't too sure if it was going to happen. And on Sunday, he finally sent me a message from Birmingham, England, saying that the Royal Air Force had agreed to fly him out, even though he had no real connections to Great Britain, and this guy was a complete Canadian, Canadian worker and Canadian supporter, but the RAF took him out. So, and now he's still waiting for the Canadian government to deal with the bureaucracy problem, but I think you'd agree that it's much much better to be doing that in Birmingham, England, than running from the Taliban in Kabul.
As I say, the difference by that much, how his story has changed from somebody, a number of people's tonight compared to a week ago. That's
it's one of the little good pieces of good news, in what's been just a complete don't want to swear in your podcast, but a complete S storm of bad news.
You definitely can when it comes to this stuff, for sure. I mean,
it was a complete shit storm, and it was the one piece of good news so far that he's able to do that, because I really, really felt for this guy, this poor guy. You know, he sent me photos of his kids, and he's got beautiful little children, and his little girl's about the same age as my little girl, she wanted to take, like, the 3 years old, she wanted to take her to, when they finally arrived in Toronto, we take them to some of her favorite playgrounds in the city. And, we had a play date scheduled, and it was heartbreaking to know that, that our play date may not happen because the little girl would end up being murdered by the Taliban because her father decided to work as a security commander for the Canadian embassy. And it's,
Oh, man, my prayers go out to you, man, trying to keep this all together, because it's tearing me up on the inside just listening to you tell these stories, and I've only had to deal with it for a few hours now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm. yeah.
So, okay, you got time for a couple quick more questions? I know I told you I'd have you out of here, and of course I look at the clock, and I've already kept you longer than I said I would. So let's shift gears, let's lighten this up a little bit. What made you want to become a reporter in the first place?
I never actually got into, I never really had any aspirations to be able to get into journalism. I went to school for television. I graduated from high school, wanting to, you know, the most ever getting into journalism would be like a photographer or something or a TV cameraman. You know, when I was in high school, I used to volunteer for the local cable TV station, working on their news show as a camera operator, you know, going out in the field and listening for stuff in the scanner and shooting news and stuff, which really appealed to me, and I thought that would be my career. Graduated from school, I ended up working in TV for a bit, and decided it wasn't for me, and without any journalism or training or going to J school, I applied to a few newspapers about 12 years ago, and I ended up getting hired at a paper out in Alberta in Western Canada. I'm born and raised in the Toronto area, so Alberta is just north of Montana, so just as a geographical reference for the American listeners, which is just about as far away from Toronto as you can be and still, you know, be out of the ocean. Alberta is it's a totally different dynamic than Toronto. Toronto is a very dynamic city. It's, you know, probably equivalent to Chicago or Los Angeles in terms of size and density and flavor. Probably Chicago is probably the closest proximity to Toronto that I've seen in the States, except for that river they turn green every St. Patrick's Day. You know that here. Lake Ontario is a little too big to turn green, but sort of the Alberta dynamic, and you fall in love with that province. I'd lived out there for 12 years. I met my wife out there, got married out there, our little girl was born out there, and I ended up moving back to Toronto about 3 years ago. I got hired at the Toronto Sun, which is one of Canada's larger papers. So I moved back there, and I've been here ever since. We've been hoping to move back. I'd love to move back to Alberta at some point, but you know, the job takes me here. But it's been a very interesting career so far. But I think what's been happening for the past week is more or less defined my journalism career. It's really I'm proud of the work I've done, and I'm really hoping that it can make a difference with what's happening right now with our government and. It's a baffling disregard of what's happening with in Afghanistan, a problem that really they made.
So one more question for you here real quick. Two. I've got one, and then I've got to ask the other one, anyways. How does Canada look at President Biden?
It's really hard to say. Canada is very... I'd say that Canada leans a lot further left than a lot of the U.S. You know, what a lot of Americans would consider to be left-wing, like President Obama, for example, would probably fit quite right in the Canadian ideological landscape. I know that Obama has seemed as quite the left-winger down there, but up here I think that he would probably be... considered right wing. It's just the different dynamics between our two countries. I think that a lot of Canadians watched the Trump years with kind of a mix of amusement and wonder. I think that a lot of Canadians are kind of they're going to be interested to see exactly how President Biden deals with a lot of what Trump has left. I know that, economically there was a lot of issues. I know that Trump was a big supporter of oil and gas, especially in Western Canada is built on oil and gas. There was a pipeline that we've been trying to get built that would transport Alberta oil to refineries in Texas that Obama was against during the Donald Trump years. We were, there was a lot of good progress in getting that built. Unfortunately, one of the first things that President Biden did was cancel it. So there was a lot of angst there. On the other hand, a lot of the trade policies enacted by President Trump were very, very protectionist and really affected our economy quite harshly. Yes, particularly when it came to things like steel exports. American industry uses a lot of Canadian steel, and just the way it was framed. They put a lot of heavy tariffs on Canadian steel exports was it really affected our industry a lot, and it really kind of soured a lot of the relations between the two. So really, there's an ideological aspect, and there's also an economic aspect. And I think those two, I think the average Canadian, at least those who are half interested in politics, they struggle a lot to reconcile those two.
So the other thing I have to ask you about, because I'm from Western Pennsylvania, of course, this is going to end badly for you. I mean, I know you've got other things on your plate right now, but, you know, as a Penguins fan, I have to ask you, are the Maple Leafs still playing hockey?
Oh, the Leafs suck. the Leafs haven't won a cup since my father was in school. Like, that's one of the things that, you know, the Leafs have made me, like, give up on being a hockey fan, because the Leafs are just disappointing. Whereas when I lived out west, Calgary Flames were kicking ass. You know, the Calgary Flames, and I was up there, you know, getting very, very close to getting to the cup final. I think the Penguins are definitely one of the greatest teams in the NHL. And, you know, it really comes down to, your Canadians are doing better than our Canadians. Just like when it comes to things like the Blue Jays in baseball, like our Dominicans are doing better than your Dominicans, you know.
Talking baseball. I'm not going to talk about the Pirates. They're still playing AAA baseball.
the Leafs are kind of a sore subject here, because there's a lot of really diehard Leaf fans here who just every year they say, "Oh, this will be the year. This will be the year." And I'm like, "Well, you know, it's been, you know, 40, 50 years since the Leafs left one last one my cup. You know, it's." I think that, a lot of Toronto sports fans are almost going through punishment. And I think a lot of them are abandoning the Leafs for other Canadian teams like the Habs or even the Sabres or the Red Wings. Just stuff that games they can get to within a few hours without constantly admiring the factory of sadness as the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, Brian, I appreciate the time tonight. I know you're busy, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate the work you're doing, and keep me up to date, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
No, I appreciate having me on anytime. I'm always happy to talk to you.
Thank you. And there we go. Maybe. Maybe. You're going to end? There we go. Got Brian off the phone there, finally. Sorry. Seems that call didn't register any time on Skype tonight, so that's good. there goes the computer. I love you, computer. Okay, so I wanted to get that to you. I'm blessed to have the opportunity to get that to you. That's what this show's all about, the conversational yet controversial part of this. That's what we did here tonight. But, so now we've got about 25 minutes left, but I want to leave that alone. I want to leave all the politics and all of the stuff out of that. Okay, so let's bear that in mind. That's not what we're going to do. It's a horrible mess. That mess. But I do want to talk about something else, and I want to kind of bring the show up a little bit because, man, I need to talk about something else right now. So what we're going to do, now this is, I said I wanted to bring the show up. Of course, this isn't going to bring the show up per se, but it will. Follow me for a minute. Charlie Watts, the drummer from the Rolling Stones, died today as well. Rolling Stones, love them or hate them, they've got to be in that top 10 discussion of bands of all time. So I want to shift gears into that. I want to talk, I want to kind of bring it up and kind of, I feel for that guy in my heart, getting these messages from people. And I can't imagine getting, like I said, I shared in the chat room earlier the video from the Toronto Sun that he shared. I feel it in my heart. I just don't know. So just be aware of that. So like I said, let's get into the music end of this. In honor of Charlie Watts, let's throw the lines open. You know the number. 234-738-2552. Standard tolls rates apply. Tell me something. Either your favorite band. I answered this question the other day on Facebook. It kind of surprised some people. Apparently, nobody who knows me. Well, Brian Travelers of the UB40 is dead, too. Man, I'm killing all kinds of good musicians tonight. I'm not personally killing them. Jeez, a pizza outside of bed. But kind of surprised some people the other day when I said this. My favorite album of all time. Of course, anybody who knows me knows this is true, but it surprised some people. My favorite album of all time is Hotel California by the Eagles. I'm interested. I mean, it may be the only album besides the... What is that? The Wall by Pink Floyd that I've probably listened to a bunch of times. Just saying. So everybody knows. Chuck Banks Frozen, Led Zeppelin is probably his favorite band, which I can see that. I'm not going to argue that. Good to see Chuck. I hope his kids have a healthy and successful season. As I think you're still coaching football there, Chuck. If not, I hope your kids, their kids, have a healthy and successful season with or without you. I know you're still doing some coaching somewhere out there. I can't keep up with you, though, because I'm having a hard time keeping track of myself. So, you understand that, I'm sure. So that's kind of some of the stuff I want to get into. Hotel California is a forgettable album. Geo, no, it's not. It's probably the best Eagles album. That's for sure. Without question. Hotel California is a great song. I don't have the playlist. That's it. I gotta get the playlist up in front of me because I'm horrible at remembering which songs are which on albums. Because the Eagles are my favorite band of all time, by the way, for those people out there who need to know that for whatever reason. I gotta make sure I don't play any of it because I'll be sued for thousands and millions of dollars that I don't have, but so gotta be careful about all that. Man, my internet is slow tonight, or my computer is slow. Something is slow here. Oh, good grief. Gonna hit it with a hammer. Anybody know if a Windows update is due? Because it sure feels like one's out there. Ugh. Anyways, I'll eventually get that up. No, it's not. Oh, Geo is on this tonight. He is really harping on this Eagles thing, and I think it's... I don't know. I'm biased. I love the Eagles, so there's that. Not necessarily... maybe not necessarily the best judge of everything. Don Henley's solo career is garbage. New stuff. The new album that he has out, I don't know if it's the newest album he has out, Cass Country. Definitely a different sound, but isn't garbage. That's my opinion. I know you guys love that. Take It Easy. Yeah, that's what we need. That's what we need right now. Why is it I can't find something I'm looking for when I want it? Life in the Fast Lane. Come on now. You gotta be on Life in the Fast Lane. I would answer whoever's calling, but Skype isn't letting it ring. So, keep calling. I might be able to answer it sometime. Ooh. Yeah, I know I missed the call, but you didn't let me answer it. So call back if you tried calling and it didn't work. For whatever reason. Because just how my night's gone. So. A lot of clicking because I'm trying to get things squared away. I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, so if you did try calling, please try to call back. I'm disappointed to see the hate for the Eagles. I figured more of you. Actually, after seeing some of the Spotify things and those dynamic stats of what people were listening to that listened to the report, it doesn't surprise me. Actually, I am surprised by some of that, and I would try to open that and read that to you, but the way my computer's operating right now, I'm not going to get into it. So, but, yeah. A little surprised by the hate there. no other alternatives being posted, by the way. They're just definitely hating. And like I said, so here's the deal. Here's the deal for you folks. Oh, come on. Why aren't you popping up in Ring? What is the problem here, Skype? I see. I see you. But you don't pop up to Ring. Okay, we're going to do this then. Hold on, everybody. Give me 2 seconds here. We'll do it this way. So whoever called in again, whatever's going on, I don't quite get it. Apparently my computer is killing me tonight. But that's okay, because I think I have Plan B here going soon, surely. So maybe we'll give that a whirl here. Always Plan B around here, because that's what we have to do. Always something. Okay. A lot of dead air. Sorry. Linda Rodsted. She loves Warrant and Bon Jovi. Not quite. Bon Jovi. I prefer Tom Petty. Can we go to Tom Petty? Anybody out there hate on Tom Petty? Let's see if I can call him. Maybe that'd be easier. Oh, good grief. Shakes my head. Live radio, it's best here. That's all we got for you. Or all I've got for you. Yacht Rock? Oh, no. We can't be having any of that. Actually, some of it's pretty good. Just kidding. Let's see. Close that. Bring that up. Yep. I'm going to talk you through this, because what else do I have to do right now? See if he answers his phone. See if it makes the call even. How about that? Oh, it's connecting. Let's see if it actually connects.
Hello.
Everett, I heard you were trying to call, so I did the next best thing and call you.
Oh, you know, I appreciate that. I'm a long-time listener, and this is the first time you've called me on air. I heard you talking about the Eagles.
Yes, sir. Well, we started with, obviously, the passing of Charlie Watt. But and I jumped at Eagles because that's probably more stuff I know. So.
Oh, the Eagles. Why? Of all the bands out there you could listen to, why the Eagles?
Because they're good. Good songs.
I don't know, man.
Okay, so who
Rolling Stones are better. The Eagles is just so depressing. It's like I hear an Eagles song and I immediately get sad and want to drink.
Well, come on. I mean, I live in Western Pennsylvania. What else do you got?
I guess this is true. But no, seriously, I heard you talking about Charlie Watts, and the music industry, and if you hear the rain and thunder, you'll have to forgive me, there's a huge storm going on. If you've noticed, it seems like the last 2-3 years the music industry has just been hit with these major talent deaths, and it's hard to say that at 80 it's surprising, but it's really a huge loss. I've had the chance to talk to a few people this week, or not this week, today. And, there was speculation when he pulled out of the tour and had, I can't remember his text name, the guy that fills in for him, join the tour prep. But, it's really an end of an era for rock and roll today.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, we're getting into that where this is definitely going to be a changing of the guard, so to speak, across the board in the next few years, no matter which band we want to pick. I mean, it's just going to be bad. There's all going to go away sooner than later, sadly.
I mean, that's the natural part of life. I mean, in a way, like I said, I've talked to quite a few people today, and, you know, there's some shock, but at the same time, again, to be 80 and to have done what he did for as long as he did, I mean, almost 60 years, he was drumming for the Rolling Stones. That's an amazing career.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see that ever again, 60 years with one group.
No, I don't think we will. I don't think we'll see any group really survive for 60 years. I mean, I hope NSYNC isn't still around in, 40 years. But you look at his body of work and how he did it with dignity. I mean, he was never flashy, but he was always solid.
That's the key, right? You got to know your role, right? Because some people need to be the front man, and some people need to support the act. And I think he did great at what he did.
Yeah, but you know, those drummers have that reputation for being a little rowdy and out of hand, and yet he'd always show up in typically like a 3-piece suit and just kind of keep that rhythm for everybody.
That's key. Okay, so you're not going number one Rolling Stones, though, are you?
What do you mean, number one? Best band ever?
Yeah.
No, you know, I think if I had to pick my number one, it would be Firehouse.
No, I know better than that. I know better than that.
That's just a little shout out to Captain Canada out there.
Yeah, well, he's going by Captain tonight. He's not proud of Canada tonight. So,
When you're Canadian at this point, can you be?
Yeah, I was gonna say I get it tonight. So he must. He's also wearing a Maple Leafs jersey just to make sure he stays safe. Okay, so no, honestly, so you've got the Eagles about 50. So who are some of the ones above them here that we need to kind of dissect?
You know, it changes with every genre. It changes with my mood. I mean, like today, not that your listeners need to hear my musical choices, but today and yesterday, I've gone everywhere from Glenn Miller to 80s skater thrash out of Chicago. Little Barry Manilow thrown in there. I mean, my musical tastes vary constantly, and to put it a list of, the best this, the best that, I really can't do it, because there are so many great talents out there in different genres that, as a musician, well, as a person, everybody should be listening to all different kinds of music. And as a musician, I like to hear different aspects of different types of music and hopefully pick up a little bit I can steal and stick into the stuff I do.
No, we can't have that ever. You know, this show, we need definitive answers and all of that. So you're going to have to pick somebody here or do something here.
All right, if I had to say the number one band, and I know this is going to make people cringe, but I would say classic era Guns N' Roses. Not today's Guns N' Roses, but the original lineup of Guns N' Roses, only because that album held up for so long and even to this day still feels current.
Okay, so how about this? How about we go this way? That's very true. That's a good stuff. How about we go this one? Most overrated band.
God, you know, you would think that is easy to pick, but again, it's kind of tough. I mean, like the boy bands, all of those are overrated. If you're going straight overrated band, and I know this is going to ruffle a few feathers, but in history, I would say Led Zeppelin.
Ooh, that's going to ruffle some feathers in the chat room for sure. Good place to be, though, having an honest discussion. Okay, so I got my Spotify open, so I wanted to get these people up here. And I've never heard of Christian Finnegan, so that's always helpful for this conversation. These are the people that are listening to my show and what they listen to. Robin Williams, that makes sense. I can kind of dig that because I'd listen to Robin Williams, too. Tool, Moby, and Cat Stevens. What an interesting group of people that listen to my show. I'm not sure what that says about me or what that says about them. But I'm all in favor of the Robin Williams.
I think that's a fantastic mix.
Yeah, that's a good thing, right? Because there's a big mix there. To get from Robin Williams to Tool, that's the Kevin Bacon 6 degrees separation somewhere.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about Tool, and I know they just had an album out a couple of years ago, but when you talk about Tool, I can't help but go back to the early Green Jelly days. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
No, I can't say I am.
Because you don't need to be. I mean, they are literally, they used to bill themselves as the worst band in the world. And they had a hit song, a surprising hit song called Three Little Pigs back in, I think it was like 93.
I guess. I'll look that up after the show, but I'd be lying to you if I said, I'm not going to even lie to you. So.
yeah, you know, I wouldn't waste your time. But there's some Green Jelly Tool connections there, that a couple of the people from Green Jelly were in Tool for a while. I think one still is.
Yeah, but Germantown Runner makes a good point. Let's not forget Three Doors Down, one of my favorite bands. I hear a couple of their musicians or their band listen to the show. Shout out to them. So that's cool. We'll see. But, okay, so we mentioned it. We kind of beat around it, but I want to make sure we get it listened to. Out to the listeners properly. Captain Canada was on your show 2 weeks ago, correct?
Yes.
Duck Pond Staple, Captain Canada, was out there talking conspiracies, and you guys got into a little bit of music, but so where can people find your show and that show in particular? Because I know there's some ponders out there who need to hear this.
Oh, they can find our show, which I appreciate the opportunity to shamelessly plug it. It's Extension 13, and you can find it on most of the major podcast outlets and on Spreaker and Apple Podcasts and Google. And you can find it, we prefer, at extension13.com.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good place to get it. And I know I got it and got it in the Apple so I could listen to it while I was sitting in construction the other day. Because I was sitting there talking to myself. So I was talking to you guys. But I don't know if anybody's seen me talking to that. Like, you know, that would have been awkward, sitting there talking to myself, it would seem. Then again, what did I expect, right? There's nothing worse, Everett, than walking down an aisle at a store and somebody says, "How are you?" And you say, "I'm good, thanks." And then you realize they're on the phone.
You know, that's happened to me so many times. I don't even, like, I don't look up anymore. I don't want to see people because, you know, you run into the people who are waving and you're not sure. I live in a relatively small town. And you're not sure if you know them or not. And it turns out they're waving to their wife or husband down the aisle behind you. And, you know, I'm nervous to almost recognize anybody at this point in time.
Well, nobody
mostly because I end up looking a little stupid when I do. But, you know, I'm good at that.
Because nobody has any good conversation anymore. That's for sure. First off.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? That's what was nice about having Captain Canada on. The show went in a whole bunch of different directions that I don't think we really expected, but we just sat down. It was like we were just having a conversation and happened to be, you know, broadcast and recorded too.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing. Like I said, I enjoy listening to it. Well, I enjoy talking to it. I don't know if I would have did that live, but since I was sitting in my car in traffic, I felt like I needed to interject. A little disappointed you guys didn't interact back, but I guess...
Well, you know, I have enough problems trying to keep the studio up and running. Sometimes I miss the different chats and that, and I know that people get disappointed when I do that, but I'm really not allowed to touch buttons, and when the show is running, all I'm doing is touching buttons, and it makes me nervous.
I get it. That's why I'm only on the pond. Like, people are mad at me because I'm not on Facebook, reading messages there, or reading text people text me during the show. I'm like, good grief, get over it. I'm not going to be reading my phone or my email or my Twitter or my... Just show up on the pond.
And you know, part of it, and I love that you have the chat room and that you're good at interacting with the chatters. For me, when we're talking to somebody, I typically try to be 100% engrossed in that conversation. And sometimes I just forget to look at the chat room because, and you know, you get the opportunity to speak to somebody who you've wanted to speak to for a long time or about a topic that you wanted to talk about for a long time. And I want to have that conversation, and maybe it's selfish, but I want it to be as interesting a conversation as it can be. And I often forget that people are listening.
It's we're talking shop here, folks. Sorry for the few people that don't get it. It's that fine line between what I want and I've learned through the years to figure out. Like, I'll shout him out. He knows who I'm talking about. Germantown Runner can steer me a little bit differently than I planned on going. Well, sometimes a lot differently. Let's not lie. And sometimes it's better, and we go with it. And sometimes I think where I'm going is better, and I just go with that. But that comes, I mean, having a chat room in front of you for 10 years. Well, at one time, four. Good God, you want to talk about making your head spin.
I don't know how people can manage that many.
You don't. You really don't. You just watch it go by, and then there are some nights, like a few weeks ago, you guys and Captain Cannon, you were talking music, and I'm like, okay, I'd, you know, look at it, and I'd see is this whole conversation, and I'm like, okay, and then I get back into my little train of thought, and then I'd look up, and there'd be something. I'm like, oh, okay, and then by the time I get try to start to write it down, it'd be up and gone. I went, those are the... Wait, I'm not complaining. I'm glad you guys enjoy it, and that pond is meant for everybody. And I enjoy the absolute engagement sometimes, and I enjoy the absolute ignoring of it, too, because it's just fun to see people interacting in a way that's meaningful to them. But sometimes it's like, wait, hold on just a second. Give me 2 seconds to get that question.
Yeah, I think both Captain Canada and I have to apologize a little bit because we did... We really did that night hijack your chat room. I mean, we were talking back and forth constantly, obviously listening to the show, but we didn't ask one question for the guest.
That's fine. That like I said, that's fine. So, like, I enjoy that, but like I said, there's a few questions in there that I'm sure got lost because I just didn't see them whatever. It is what it is. I enjoy people being there, and I really wish that everybody that listened could be there at least once, but I know I talked to a listener from Australia today that, well, you know, it's 9 a.m. Wednesday morning there at work. It happens.
Yeah, that can be tough for people, especially when you have a listener, you know, all the way around the world like that, and you have them everywhere.
That's what they say. We'll see. Everett, thanks for stopping in, and I think we answered the question that I set out to answer.
I hope we did.
I'm not sure now, but at least we kind of lightened the mood because, like I said, that was just a little heavy and I needed to get somewhere I could at least try to sleep tonight. So,
well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Actually, I called you. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah. Skype, I called twice and each time Skype just kind of like disconnected.
Yeah, I know. It's been jerky tonight. But anyways, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mountain Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. Please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mallard.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guest and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mountain Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mallard at checkout of duckpondshop.com, where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mallard at checkout, duckpondshop.com. Until next week, stay safe.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.